Travelstead, next item is a separation between nets. That will be right back.
We briefed you on House Bill 2256 that was adopted during the 2009 session of the General Assembly and noted that it repealed the current separation requirement between fixed fishing devices and any other type of net. That was 300 yards. You adopted an emergency regulation last month to continue that 300-yard separation so as to avoid confusion in the public during that period of lapse that otherwise would have occurred. We also included provisions in the emergency regulation that would allow the owner of any fixed fishing device to apply to the commissioner for a variance in that 300-yard separation requirement if he can demonstrate to the commissioner's satisfaction that the setting of a net closer or at 300 yards will impact the catch of the fixed fishing device. And in that case, the commissioner can set a greater distance of separation. If the commissioner doesn't agree to grant the variance, then the matter could be appealed to the full commission for a different decision. We think allowance of a variance and the appeal process is about as responsive to the General Assembly as we can get on this issue. The fact is, the 300-yard separation has existed for at least 60 years without very much complaint at all. So it seems to be working for the most part. And we know throughout the bay that there are quite a few nets that are currently set at that 300-yard separation. So changing the 300 yards outright to a larger distance would make quite a few nets that are now legal suddenly illegal, and I don't think that's something that we would want to do. We did talk to the Finfish Management Advisory Committee last night about this, relaying to them the specifics that revolve around this case that was brought to Delegate Pollard's attention. And it was their feeling that the 300-yard separation was adequate. It had worked for a number of decades without a problem. Fishermen were used to it. And that the variance and appeal process was not needed. In fact, they voted to not endorse the institution of a variance process, believing that the commission shouldn't change what has otherwise been a state standard based on one complaint of one fisherman. And I think there's, you know, that makes sense to a degree. The only question that remains in staff's mind is whether or not simply adopting a regulation that continues what was otherwise in code is sufficiently responsive to the General Assembly, who struck the 300-yard distance and directed you to look at the issue, and one would assume to come up with a different solution. So I guess I have to leave it to you as to whether or not you think the regulation as proposed is responsive, or whether you want to take the advice of the advisory committee and simply reinstate the 300-yard without the variance provisions.
I'll tell you what.
We received no public comment on this other than the advisory committee comments.
I was thinking as I went out, and sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. I'm not so sure. We've advertised a public hearing. Throw this out to the commission for consideration. Why don't we hold the public hearing, see what's said at the public hearing, and then it may be prudent before adopting anything, we go back, of course, to the 300 foot. We convey to Delegate Pollard what we've learned through the vetting process and ask him for further guidance. Legislators, when they do what they do it with the best of intent. There's no doubt about that. But sometimes just because of the way that the constituency flow goes, they haven't heard the big picture. So I just throw that out for consideration. I don't know.
I will tell you that in a conversation with Delegate Pollard before we brought this to you last month, he said it was his intention to stay out of the issue once it was in your hands. So.
No, well, he just answered that. That answered the question for me then.
Read that however you wish.
I read it. It's up to us. Do what we think is right. That's exactly what he said to you. That's what the FMAC had to say, and the commercial watermen and those involved have no problem. But anyway, Mr. Robbins, comment?
I have a question for Jack, if I may. Jack, the variance process that you envisioned in the draft regulation, the commissioner would make a determination, but would not the burden of proof rest with the appellant? That is, the person seeking the variance would have to document somehow or argue and prove that, in fact, having a net 300 yards within their net or the distance of 300 yards would somehow impact their catch.
Exactly, and I think that's, in my view, a pretty tall order to be met. Is how would one prove that a net set at that distance is affecting the catch of the pound net or whatever the gear is? Unless you develop some sort of statistical experimental design, if you will, and run it over a period of years, it's going to be hard to really.
We got time to do that every day.
And the annual variation in the catch of a particular net, it can be tremendous, whether there's another net set near it or not.
We're going to have a public hearing. We'll hear you then, Mr. Hollowell. Maybe not ask Delegate Pollard, but what we do is report the results of what we find. I want to stay in communication with him. I don't want to put him in a position where he becomes the arbiter, but anyway, if he said that to you, I think we should hold the public hearing and see what we get, and then go from there. Public hearing is up. Who wants to be heard? It's Hollowell. Good afternoon, sir.
My name is Robert Hollowell.
Good to have you here.
I have a little something on the back of my mind about this. When a gentleman goes and drives a fixed fishing device, is there anything on the law books to tell him can he move east or west?
On a fixed fishing device?
Yeah.
No, it's licensed, but that's right there.
Okay. Right before Mr. Etheridge sold this particular fishing device, I had this survey in 1981 called this gentleman. 1 year I caught some fish, he took his lead off and turned it in here to make me illegal.
Okay.
And,
you can't do that. I don't know when that happened, but that.
This one here at Old Great Neck Road in 1981 is where it was supposed to be. The one on Bayberry, they moved it 3 years in a row all the way to almost. And then turned your lead in.
What year would that have been?
81. So
81.
On the survey. And actually, the Marine Resource Board made them move that pound net back to Bayberry Street.
We should have. Absolutely.
And this one, before Mr. Etheridge sold it, and I called over and talked to, I forgot who about it, moved it to almost to New Great Neck Road, not Old Great Neck. So this one actually.
Those were the days before we had a little bit better GPS technology and things like that we do now. And we're still finding problems.
I think you've got a copy of that and Jack does too.
Okay. Hold on to that.
I still got it.
You got any comment on the proposed regulation about the 300 feet? Leave it alone or do something with it?
It's 900.
I mean 300 yards, my fault.
It's 900 feet.
Right.
My only problem is if he's moved that net down on me, does it make me break if my net is too close?
He's moved it. It's not your problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Anyone else wish to be heard?
Thank
you. Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
My name is Billy Haney. I'm a pound net fisherman from Reedville. I've been pound netting, I guess, for about 7 years. And I guess I'm the one responsible for this, all this confusion and all. But I talked to Albert Pollard last year because I'd had a pound net location for, I guess, about 6 years and had been there as long as I can remember somebody else owned it. But the problem is a gill netter came in there, and he said he's around like 1,100 feet from my trap. And the whole thing is his whole gill net, he said it there last year, the 1st of September, and never took it up till December. And I mean, that's just, it's completely blocking my pound net off. I mean, in the fall, and I, as far as experiments go, I mean, I've always done, you know, you look forward to September and October, you know, for spot and rock. You know, that's when we make our money back in the pound net. And I mean, I've always had a good fall until last year. I mean, it's pretty obvious. As far as, you know, we've always known that, like all the pounders, they never sit, you know, within 1,800 feet of each other. And this gill, particular gill netter, come in here and did that. And I mean, I could just see my catch drop right off. And I guess it comes down to, I've got a $500 gill net blocking off a $25,000 pound net. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just, there's plenty of room inshore he could go. And this particular gill netter, he's got to be 15 stands up and down the whole bay shore from Seton Point to Smith Point. And right there at my trap, that's the only one that where he really comes out and blocks off. I mean, he's blocking off my entire pound net is what it is. And I mean, I was just looking for him if he could move it 400 or 500 feet to the north. Either that or maybe, you know, just completely get rid of the offshore part of the net. That's pretty much all I'm asking for. But, I mean, I do support the regulation. I'd like to see it go through. As far as taking pictures, there's really no way I could take any pictures to show y'all.
What would you like to see go through?
I mean, well, I mean, I'd like to be able to get, well, I'd like to be able to have a variance put in, you know, like if I could just get him to move 400 or 500 more feet north. I mean, that's what I was looking for. I don't know if this is the right time to be asking for that or not, but, I mean, that's what I was hoping
for. Did anybody from law enforcement talk to him?
Well, no, because he's legal right now.
No, I understand that, but
I mean, he's been asked, you know, I mean, he knows that he's in the wrong. I mean, nobody else would do it. There's plenty of gill netters around, and everybody knows, you know, it's not right to do it. I mean, 900 feet sounds like a lot. I've been sitting here talking about it. But, you know, when you're out there on the water, it's nowhere. I mean, it's right there. And pretty much what it comes down to is my whole fall season is shot because it is one gill net. And like that, that's when I usually, you know, make most of my money to get my expense back. But anyhow, that's what I was looking for anyway.
Of course, your fixed fishing device is there, and then he comes and sets down on it, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I mean, last year was his first year there. I mean, having it's just
remember the code for impeding fishing? Not right off?
Not right off. I think it's 28.2 by 900. It's in that chapter 9.
Yeah. It's not it. But anyway, there's a law that Delegate Croshaw back many years ago put in that basically precluded someone from interfering with the lawful fishing operation of others. And it works, cuts both ways. And I'm not so sure, although it's, I don't know. It's just real hard to make, change a law based on one knothead.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I agreed with the variance part, the way y'all were doing it, because when I talked to Pollard, we had talked about, you know, completely changing it, you know, trying to get it changed, you know, as far as 1,800 feet, which is what most of the traps and all out there are at least 1,800 feet. I mean, a lot of them are, you know, a whole lot more than that. But, I mean, he knows he's in the wrong. I mean, everybody up there knows he's in the wrong, doing it? And but it's legal is the problem. It's just not, I guess, it's just no other fisherman up there would do something like that, I guess is what I'm getting
legal,
at.
It's just not ethical.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But anyhow, I mean, I thought it was worth a try. I mean, if not, that's something I'm going to have to live with, you know, as long as I had to.
I sympathize with you. I just don't know the solution.
Yeah.
Mr. Lane and Mr. Let me hear, please, sir. Mr. Lane and Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Haney, did you formerly have a gill net or other fishing device in the area where the fishing gill net is located then?
Well, it is. The state gill net stand is what it is. And I did have that stand for 2 or 3 years, but I'd put a net on it, I mean, which is legal. I mean, you know, you get it checked off at the net one day in the season, you get it checked off and you keep the stand. And the only reason I had it there was to keep all the gill netters. I mean, that's why I had it there, was to keep all the gill netters from coming in there. And, which it worked until it backfired on me last year. But, yeah, I know what you're saying.
I didn't say it.
But I know what you're thinking.
Mr. Robbins, question?
Well, I was going to ask if it was a fixed stand or a
yes,
anchor
nut. Well, it's a stake. Yeah, fixed stake gill net stand.
You said you had $25,000 in a stake gill net stand?
No, that's the pound net.
The pound net.
That's I mean, that's what the pound is worth.
Yeah, I know that, but
I've got a $500 unit. And see, he's targeting the spot, but he's blocking everything. You know, I mean, no other fish can get by the net. They trail that net, and by the time they're offshore, they're gone.
Mr. Bowden, you got any comments?
Well, I think my comments probably reserved for when we start discussing the issue more.
Okay.
And I'm not into getting that.
The question I have is, I'd like to know where the people buy this net for $500.
Oh, well, I mean, it's a gill net. Now, I'm not anti-gillnet. I mean, I gillnet just as much as anybody.
I think what might have happened, like you said, I'm going to say what I was thinking then, is, you know, you kind of reserved the spot, didn't use the spot, the guy shows up. I guess the dumb question I've got is, if it's such a good spot, why weren't you actually actively fishing it?
Well, I put the gillnet stand there to protect my trap. I mean, it's something that people do up there, and of course he came and got it. And it's just, I'm just getting at it. He knows it's not right, and I was hoping that something could be done about it, but I guess not.
Let me see if anybody else in the audience has any comments. Thank you, Mr. Haney.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else have any comments? Okay, the matter is before the commission. Mr. Bowden, the commercial representative on the commission.
And a gill netter. It's much more expensive here than you have there. We discussed this last night quite a bit. And it's an issue that is new. After 50 or 60 years on the book, this is a problem all of a sudden. And being a gill netter, you know, if you follow that train of thought that he's blocking you off completely, there would be no need to set a net above North Carolina-Virginia line in the spring because it's a wall of nets all the way up. And people north catch just as much as the people south. I've set rigs a lot of times and have more in the middle rig than the other two. So the fish, you know, don't migrate straight all the time. They do swim from side to side. And I am sympathetic, but the problem lies in this. Jack said to catch from year to year. The catch from day to day is highly variable. Not year to year. I mean, you know, you could have a school of fish, use the same place for 7 days in a week, and then the following Monday, they're somewhere else. So to just address, make this affect everyone in the state for one problem. We felt at the meeting last night, have you actually talked to this gentleman and tried to address it? I mean, you know, I think that would be the first course would be try to address it. And if there was previous animosity or something between y'all, we just had a feeling like this might be personal. I don't know neither one of you. I have no idea who the other gentleman even is. And I have seen you before here at meeting. But that's how the Fed Fish Committee felt. And we also felt that it really put Steve in a bad position. He's going to have to decide on the merits what to do, and there's no merits to it because it's going to be almost impossible for you to document that you've lost catch. I mean, you know, anecdotal, yes, you could say you lost it, but far as proving it, Steve will have to make a decision or the next commissioner or the one after that in the future because this would be an ongoing thing. It wouldn't just be for this. We really put them in a bad position. We don't know what kind of proof needs to be offered. You know, and if Albert wanted to give us clearer direction, Delegate Pilot wanted to give us clearer direction, I think we could appreciate that. But I feel a little differently about the General Assembly than my colleague here because I feel like they work for us and he works for them. So it's two different situations between me and him. I mean, that's how I feel on it, and that's how I think was consensus last night. Mr. Lane was there also. I just felt like this has worked for 50 or 60 years, and to address it for one concern, even though it's probably warranted. I mean, I don't want you to feel like we don't believe because we do, but the whole thing is this is going to affect the whole public, not just one stand. So, you know, I like to see it reinstated like it was, and when at the appropriate time, I will make the motion to leave it at 300 yards like we had, and not give you the discretion, not give any commissioner discretion in the future, because it just opens up a whole new can of worms, and we don't want to put the commissioner in that spot.
Matters before the commission.
I move that we adopt the original thing that stood in place for a decade, that there would be a 300-yard separation between fishing devices and any other fishing gear.
Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Lane. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Now, what we will do, though, Jack, if we can, I know we got a lot on the plate, let's continue to think about this and maybe figure something. If we, you know, ponder it. Because I know where he's coming from. At the same time, though, you can't, I'm not going to make, go ahead, Mr. Bowden.
You know, we have a commissioner that could be a perfect arbitrator. Maybe we need to get both parties involved.
I have no problem calling the individual and talking to him. I really don't. Because
nice
I'd like to be able
to. You could sit down and actually have a discussion.
Yeah, I'm amenable to that. Because, you know, bad case makes bad law, is exactly the old saying they used to say in wherever. But that's
consequences
true.
Consequences might be dire to everybody if something isn't resolved.
That's fine. It's just, like I say, he's not going to listen to me, and I had nowhere to go.
I'll talk to him. I have no problem. We just get with Jack. Or email me or call me or something. Let me know who it is or whatever, and we'll see what we can work out. And, you know, you never know how things work out. Okay? Good enough.